The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Thanks for being with us. A good start to the week. We will have Rudy Carpenter in studio here in a bit. Rudy, the former ASU and NFL quarterback, he is doing a lot of stuff. I'll let him fill you in on it. Quite a bit with quarterbacks. He's also working with creative artists, agency, on the agency side of things. And just, he's a dad too now. So he's got his little one with him. We'll have Rudy Carpenter with us here momentarily. The Suns have signed Jamal Crawford. So the Suns point guard search 2 days before the start of the regular season, where they had the entire offseason to roll through it. They have decided that they are going to get Jamal Crawford. This now being reported, and so Jamal Crawford comes here. Jamal Crawford's numbers are nothing special. If you're a very good elite NBA point guard, you're not sitting here banging around kicking tires for jobs very late in the process. This is not a criticism, it's just a fact. If you're expecting Jamal Crawford to be the guy that comes out and gets you 8 points and 12 assists per game, 10 assists per game, I'd be very surprised by that. If he comes here and he gives you like 8 points and, I don't know, 6 assists a night, I'd be pretty happy with that. And doesn't turn the ball over a ton. So Jamal Crawford comes on board. Our opening comments brought to you by Sagicor Now. Protect what matters most. That means you do it through your life insurance. There's also things like college planning you can do, a 529 plan, lots of different products that they have at Sagicor Now. You can log on, get your free quote online, look at your whole life situation, your term life situation, do it with Sagicor. We appreciate Sagicor and their support. Rudy Carpenter here shortly. So the Suns, I just wanted to get that out of the way because really today is all about what's going on in the college football scene. And also Trump is coming to town on Friday. So we're going to have a very interesting, hectic, chaotic week in front of us. Thursday night, we have Arizona State hosting Stanford. Thursday night, we have the Cardinals playing against Denver. So this is going to be a short week in terms of talking about games and getting all geeked up. We kind of like it that way. We don't have to sit around and wait all the way until Saturday. The Cardinals game yesterday, we'll just get this out of the way first. It just felt like a replay of what we've seen in terms of play calling, like strange play calling to me. Times where I'm watching the game and is Larry Fitzgerald even in existence out here? To that end, Larry Fitzgerald's dad yesterday tweeted a couple of times and did not delete the tweets. Eric brought this attention to me last night. The tweets basically were a frustrated Fitz senior daddy response that were not deleted. Now, we like having Larry Fitzgerald senior on this show.
No, they were not deleted. They were not censored. They were about as open, honest, and blunt as possible. As I'm scrolling back here, give me a second. I'm going to find the tweet.
It was the one where they went forward on 4th and 1 and got just crushed at the line of scrimmage. And Larry Fitzgerald was not even out on the field when this happened. And his father noticed that. His father is a journalist in the Minneapolis area. He comes to many Cardinal games through the years. Larry Fitzgerald's dad has been a fixture. Those two tweets.
And now I do not see them anymore. So those magically vanished.
They magically vanished. What a shock. Stunning. But they were up for a long time because I saw them again this morning. We were going to take a screenshot of them, put them up for you guys. But, you know, the bottom line is, the dad of the star wide receiver was not happy yesterday, and this comes out. Here's where I'm at, and this is something I felt for the last couple of weeks, and I've just sat on it. I have not gone down this path, but I think it's time to do so. In professional sports, when you have an aging star player in a city where he's been a long, long time, it usually doesn't end well. It usually does not end well. I'll give you some examples. Did it end well with Shane Doan and the Coyotes? The answer is no. Did it end well with Luis Gonzalez and the Suns and the Diamondbacks? The answer is no. Did it end well with Steve Nash and the Suns? And the answer is no. Now, they eventually mended fences as time went by. Usually when players, star players, around their team that have been there from start to finish or pretty much all their career, like in the case of Luis Gonzalez and Steve Nash, it doesn't end well because nobody knows how to get through the it's time to say goodbye. I'm watching Josh Rosen when he's on the field, and he can find Christian Kirk a lot easier, it feels to me, than he can find Larry Fitzgerald. A lot of that is coverage. I understand that. But when you have the father of the star wide receiver pointing out his kid is not on the field, that's a clear indication that young player has said something to father, in my mind, or that father knows what's going on. This is a story nobody wants to address because the Cardinals will hold it over your head if you merely point out that their star receiver is not being fed the ball and is not what he once was. The star receiver doesn't want to hear that either. I'm the one that will sit over here and say when it was at the end of Luis Gonzalez's run and I had to talk on the air, granted it was television, it was not on this platform, and say he can't throw anymore, he can't move anymore, and he's really struggling, he's not going to finish here as a Diamondback, which he didn't. It was not comfortable for Luis, wasn't comfortable for me, but that's what I do. When Shane Doan was near the end, I'm not very seldom in a Coyotes locker room. Back in the day when they were actually a playoff team, I would be in there quite a bit. But it's good to see that he's mended fences. It didn't end well because his feelings were hurt. When you're in a space where you are always the face and you are always the guy, as much as I love seeing the competitive side, it doesn't end well because you can't do what you were once able to do. I'm not saying Larry Fitzgerald can't play. But Larry Fitzgerald's gone, what is it now, 6 games without a touchdown? Longest stretch in his career? Is that because Sam Bradford couldn't find him and had to run for his life? Is that because Josh Rosen isn't looking his direction? Yesterday, Larry Fitzgerald was targeted, I believe, 8 times. I'll have to go back and look during the break. But Christian Kirk, it felt to me as the game was progressing, and even last week against San Francisco, it may be defenses saying we're not going to let Larry catch the ball, or just maybe Josh Rosen has a comfort level with Christian Kirk that he doesn't have with Fitz. Do you agree with any of this?
I do. I do. And I do have I didn't find the tweet, but I do have the stats up. Fitz was targeted 8 times. That was a team high. Christian Kirk was targeted 7 times. Kirk had 6 catches for 77 yards, and Fitz had 5 for 39. And the most, I don't know, head-scratching thing, Brad, is you realize the Cardinals have not scored a single point in the third quarter all season? They've been outscored 42-0 in the third quarter.
They've been outscored. I wrote yesterday about their third down conversion in the last month.
Ridiculous. Well, 0 for 10 yesterday, right?
It's like 5 for – I've got it in my story. You know what? This is the way this show works. Let me just pull my story up because I don't have my notes in front of me from what I wrote yesterday.
I mean, we all had them going up to Minnesota and losing anyway. So, I mean, like you said, that yesterday just sort of followed the script that we all expected, but it doesn't make it any better. I mean, you're 1-5 now, and whatever little slimmer of hope you had after the Niners win is pretty much gone now.
Well,
and you have a short week. You have Denver coming in, you know, a team that Cardinals could beat, but probably won't.
Over the last 4 games, the Cardinals are 5 for 42 converting third downs. 5 for 42. The opposition has run 293 plays in the last 4 games. The Cardinals have run 208. The thing is, Eric, on this story, yesterday they ran 55 plays compared to the Vikings 70, and it could have got out of hand like it did a couple weeks ago. But what I'm seeing out of them is how do they have their tongues not hit the ground this Thursday night against Denver? When you're playing 4 games or 3 games in a span of 11 days, you're playing 3 games in a span of 11 days. You have a Sunday night, following Sunday, that's 7. 4 days, Denver, that's 11.
And it would have been nice to have the schedule flip-flopped where they would have gone to Minnesota and then this last Sunday had a shorter trip up to San Francisco and then the quick turnaround.
Yes.
You know, I talked to a couple team officials last week. They got home in 1 hour and 15 minutes from San Francisco. I guarantee they did not get home in hour and 15 minutes yesterday after that Vikings game because the weather was horrible up there.
And you're thinking that if that defense has been on the field for 293 plays in the last 4 weeks – and they've got 3 days to recover before playing on Thursday, a fourth day against Denver. How do you possibly have any gas left in the tank? And I think the defense, look, they're not doing well against the run. I get that. But Marcus Golden and Chandler Jones yesterday against Kirk Cousins, I liked what that was all about. the strip and the score with Buda Baker. That's what I've seen out of this defense. Last week at San Francisco, they made some plays, but they simply don't have enough up front to stop the run. They just don't. And then Mike McCoy's play calling, once again, it's zone read, zone read, zone read, and more zone read. And there comes a point where I'm just sitting in my office yelling at the TV, no more zone read. There's no reason for this. David Johnson cannot get on track. I'm going to talk to Rudy here in a little bit about Rudy Carpenter about how he's seen Josh Rosen progress. If there's a silver lining to me, it's that Josh Rosen and the Cardinals yesterday did not quit. I didn't feel like their offense quit yesterday. I just didn't. Defensively, in terms of allowing yards on the ground, you can make a different case on that front. All right, we're going to switch over to college football next. Brock Purdy. Guys at ASU and U of A, come on, man. Come on. Keep one of these kids at home. We'll get into that and much more. Baseball playoffs, too. Stay with us. So Saturday was a tough day for me personally, and you guys know, and you watch this, I'm an open book about stuff. Saturday I had to give a eulogy for someone I met 9 years ago and did numerous stories on, Tiffany Tate. Her battle with cystic fibrosis came to a, I would say, heroic the way she handled her stuff. I had somebody texted me Friday night, said, I've never seen you so distraught. They saw me last week. I don't think I was distraught, and just I've been in deep thought. Like, I've covered some badasses in my life. Pat Tillman would be one. Tiffany Tate would be another. And her battle with CF and what she did nationally and internationally to make a difference there. People forget that Governor Brewer, when Tiffany was about ready to get her transplant, said no to any transplant. Not going to be funded through Access. It was an insurance situation. All of us have been through insurance nightmares. None of us have been sitting there being approved for a double lung transplant and had the governor of the state say, yeah, no, we're not going to do it. And you just got to sit here and wait. There are 9 people that died in a month's time while the governor played political football, then governor played political football with this. So in the last 2 weeks since Tiff passed, and she had shared with me that she was going to go and that she had some things she wanted to share with me. This was in the last 6 months. When I went to see her the last time, her dad walked me out and he said, we want you to do the eulogy. Well, guys, if you were asked to do the eulogy for someone that you ended up caring about quite a bit, and I usually try to not get attached to stories, the pressure that you feel internally is, I got to get this right. And so Saturday was a packed church. It's actually a church that we attend, The Grove. And it was my turn to get up and speak. And I have not been in a space where my legs were shaking, my stomach was turning, and I was crying and trying to keep it together up on stage. And a long, like, probably since I got married. And then it just flowed, and it was very emotional, and it was about 25 minutes, and I finally had to give myself the hook. Has there been times on this show, Eric, you wanted to give me the hook because I just go on and on and on and drone on and on and on?
Wow, that was quite a transition. Yeah, pretty much daily.
Daily,
I
right.
That, so.
So I was in
that. You take the ship out into the ocean, and I help you navigate through this stream
right.
show, which is an ocean filled with all kinds of
And we're
things.
Open about stuff. We've been through stuff. Eric's been through stuff. I've been through stuff. We don't air our laundry here, but there's times where I just think that, guys, you're going to be in this space sometime when you're at a funeral and everybody's saying, oh, my gosh, I'm so sorry for your loss. No, this was not a loss. This was a gain for heaven. That's all it is. This girl put up with so much stuff and had so many surgeries and was a difference maker to girls basketball in our state at Seton Catholic. If I were to do a doc, and I've actually had people approach me about doing a doc and writing a book about her, and I'm not doing that, at least not now, it would be a thick book. I mean, it really would be. So I finished this, and it's pouring rain. Of course it's pouring rain. And my wife looks at me and says, you just need to go out on a golf course and clear your head. I'll make you a little adult beverage and let's go out and hit a golf ball. So we go out and hit a golf ball and a rainbow pops up. And of course, you know, what can I say at that moment? She's approving of me getting out and this is cool. About that time, my phone starts to blow up with Brock Purdy doing it again. Brock Purdy, Brock Purdy, Brock Purdy. It's like, I don't know, 4:30, 5 o'clock. So we finished up playing in the rain. It was great. I cleared my head and I get home and sure enough, there's Brock Purdy against the 6th ranked West Virginia Mountaineers. And He's killing it again. And of course, the ASU fans know where I'm going to go with this. I just have to put it out there, you know, hometown kid who got away. And they're scrambling to try to find anybody over here because Todd Graham had to fly around on his boom copter and not get Brock Purdy or Tyler Shuck. And all Brock Purdy does is knock off the sixth-ranked team in the nation as a true freshman. And they charge the field. They had dinosaur dancing with their band. It's an awesome environment back there. And he could have been here. So then I'm in much better space on Saturday night watching him do that. Friday night, I tried to sit through U of A. Man, U of A, we try on this show to give them the benefit of the doubt. Like, they're going to get it turned around under Kevin Sumlin. And they were so anemic. And there's people that I trust in the world of broadcast, college football broadcast, who are texting me saying, they are so soft. That's like the ultimate criticism of a program, is to be called soft. You do not want to be called soft. U of A was horrible on Friday night. And it wasn't just Khalil Tate getting injured. Rhett Rodriguez came in and balled out. He played well. He had to run for his life on practically every play. And so I'm looking at the Pac-12 South now after Colorado, of course, USC boat raced them. The Pac-12 South could be over here in the next week or two. We may not even make it to November. And ASU is not part of that discussion right now. They've got Stanford this week. They still have Oregon out of the Pac-12 South. But I'm looking at ASU, and can they get things figured out? Can they get the ship turned around? Because U of A certainly cannot. Khalil's out on the field, and Kevin is like, he's going to get hurt. Get him out of there. So watch some of that over the weekend. Right now, the Final Four for the college football playoff is going to be Alabama, Clemson, Notre Dame, and Ohio State, at least today. There's no other team that's going to get into that mix. I'm sorry. It's not happening. Those four, it certainly looks like, are going to be it. It's been a season of college football. There hasn't been too many surprises here. There just hasn't. And I thought it was an uneventful Saturday. The Oregon-Washington game, the way it ended, was eventful. But Oregon now, they go play at Wazoo, and game day is actually going to go to Pullman for the very first time this week. That's going to be a party. College Game Day, ESPN signature show, Eric's favorite show on television on Saturday mornings. If I were to disrupt his viewing habits, it's during game day and send him a text about anything. They're going to be at Pullman, which that's going to be great. It'll be fun to watch.
I disagree with you, by the way. I thought Saturday was great college football. I mean,
predictable.
No. Pitt, Notre Dame. How can you say predictable? There were like four or five top 10 teams that lost. And there were so many games that went down to the wire. I mean, Pitt had a chance to beat Notre Dame.
Had a chance.
Michigan State won at Penn State. Did you see that coming?
Good.
Yeah, but Penn State was really good. I mean, they were.
The Ohio State game was.
Yeah, but that's.
For mid-October, you know, to me.
We had Colorado, the last undefeated team that got
boring.
Completely boat raced. It was boring.
Game was
but
boring.
But I'm just saying, I mean. Did you see what the schedule looks like this week? If you thought last week was bad, why don't you peek ahead to what Saturday is going to bring?
I've already seen this week.
And
it's pretty. It's not great. I felt like for a mid-October
UCF
weekend.
Memphis, Brad, was an incredible game in a downpour. 31-30.
But how many people are going to watch that?
But it doesn't matter. I don't like. I cast a wide net of college football. I just don't say I'm going to watch this game. I look at the entire spectrum.
Like
Friday, Alabama's boring. Guess what? They always win big.
Friday night, or actually, I'll go back to even Friday. I'm at ASU Friday interviewing interns to be here at this place, and they're slobbering all over our shoes because they want to be mentored by Eric Sorensen. Which was fine. I run into a producer of one of the Friday night shows for high school football. And he says, you know, this high school season has been pretty boring. It's been pretty dull. I liked what you guys did with Eric going up to Prescott Valley. It's pretty. And I'm thinking, well, no, I would disagree with you. It's been a great high school football season. Are you kidding me with all these quarterbacks that are going to, and I'll talk to Rudy about it here in a minute. All these quarterbacks are going on.
It's tough to compare college, high school, and pro. To me, pro football is the most boring of the three, and it's not even close.
So Saturday, maybe it was just, even the Iowa State game was not aesthetically pleasing. It was not a well-played game. Will Greer.
And I didn't think that was a huge upset, considering that night games in Ames get crazy to begin with. But continue.
Will Greer's, I thought he was going to be my Heisman guy.
He's very good.
He wasn't good the other night. He was horrible.
I mean, he's very good.
He was horrible.
He's a really good quarterback.
All right. Did you see any? You were working, so you didn't see U of A.
No, you talk I was driving home and I heard the last few minutes of the game, and it sounded pretty bad.
I'm sitting in my office Friday night, and I'm just watching it like, what is going on here? I thought Kevin Sumlin was going to do something, and they're soft and they have no size, and Utah's just kicking them on the teeth.
I want to see Rhett Rodriguez start a game, win a game, and then have Rich Rodriguez come out on the field where he used to coach after the game and congratulate his son, who is now the quarterback at Arizona.
Wouldn't that be great if he showed up at the Territorial Cup and Rhett was starting?
He absolutely should.
Rhett was starting.
Exactly. His son is the quarterback.
It would be great if Rhett were starting, because Khalil looks like he needs amputation of his foot. He rolled it. It was a bad roll.
I didn't see that, but yeah.
Yeah, he needs to be shut down. Seriously.
And I know that there were a bunch of U of A fans not real happy about the fact that Utah tacked on that late touchdown.
The punter faked the punt. They were up by
28 points or something.
That was great.
Yeah, that didn't go over well. But hey, you know what? That's life.
Stop them.
That's life in big time college football.
Stop them.
So
Rudy Carpenter is next. I'm Brad Sussmat. So I've been looking forward to this segment for quite some time because there is a dearth of quarterback talent at the high school level that is getting recruited at an elite level, and Rudy Carpenter is a big part of that. The former Sun Devil quarterback has made the move into the business of sports, the business of athletics, but trying to help kids at the end of the day. Is that a good way to put it?
Yeah, you can say that, definitely. Yeah.
What are you doing? Just let people know.
Well, I got all kinds of things going on. I think the first thing I spend most of my time on is I'm a new dad. So I have a 5-month-old daughter, and she takes up a lot of my time. But I'm so fortunate that I get a chance to spend as much time with her. And then, you know, outside of that, I work with a company called CAA, Creative Artists Agency. I spend a lot of time with them on their coaches' representation side, along with their draft prep. And getting their quarterbacks ready for the NFL draft. Obviously, that segues into the high school and college kids who I train from a quarterback development spot. And then, you know, outside of that, I do a ton of media work here in the Valley.
So let's go back on all this, the CAA side. When you were at ASU, could you have envisioned going down this path when it was all said and done and plain? I myself, having seen you and your grit, in your fire, I could have definitely seen you going this path.
I think that's an interesting question, and it's something I talk about with my wife a ton because, you know, when I was playing at ASU, I always figured that, you know, I might get a little bit of a chance in the NFL just because I had played so many games at ASU and kind of been a starter for a long time. I thought I'd get an opportunity, but ultimately I knew that I was probably never going to be a franchise quarterback. And so coaching was something that, you know, I always thought I would get into. My hope was I'd be able to play in the NFL long enough to essentially do what John Kitna is doing at Brophy, which is coach high school football and not have to go coach 17, 18 hours a day at the college or NFL level. So, I think, you know, being in the spot I am is something I could have envisioned, maybe just not, you know, in the private side of training.
Yeah, seeing you out on a park on a Saturday morning at 9 a.m. with cones, working with 20 kids, that's where you were when you first started, right? Now you've really evolved. Is that a good way to put it?
Well, yeah, and I think the main place where I've evolved is a lot of people do training, whether it's quarterback training, receiver training, running back training, and I think there's some value in all of that, but I think where I've evolved the most is spending a lot more of my time working with these quarterbacks and understanding the game, understanding situations, understanding down and distance and clock management, understanding defensive fronts, defensive coverages, offensive pass protections, understanding defensive coverages and blitz indicators. So I guess what I'm saying is you can be a very skillful player and you can have, you know, great arm strength and great mobility and great athleticism. Mm-hmm. But if you can't make a decision and if you can't process information, those things just don't matter. And so I think what's gone on in this training is for a lot of people, it's a lot of mindless activities. So where I've evolved is trying to make kids think, trying to put them in pressure situations and trying to make them, you know, learn how to react without being a robot.
Okay, there's a lot here that Rudy is doing, and we're going to deep dive through it. But I want to run through quarterbacks first that you've either are that you are involved with, may be involved with. And let's start with Ryan Finley at North Carolina State. Right now, it looks like he's going to be one of the, if not the, number one quarterback taken in this year's draft.
Ryan's been an interesting story. So Ryan was playing at Boise State. I honestly didn't know him when he was a high school player. I got a phone call from his offensive coordinator, Mike Sanford, who's now the head coach at Western Kentucky, and asked if I had spent some time with Ryan while he was back here in the offseason. So I said I would. And really since then, it's evolved into a really awesome relationship. And then I was part of helping Ryan find a new home in North Carolina State, which was an awesome fit for him. Mm-hmm. So, you know, obviously through Ryan and that relationship, I then got a chance to spend a ton of time working with his younger brother, Ben Finley, who right now is a starting quarterback at Paradise Valley. I believe they're 6-2 for them. That's a great season. And I think that Ben actually has a ceiling for potential that's much higher than his older brother, Ryan.
Really? And he's been offered by ASU, among others.
Yeah, Ben has quite a few offers, and I imagine he'll end up getting a lot more. The reason why I say that is I think Ben has a chance to be a little bit bigger. I think he has some more natural arm strength than Ryan has. I also think from a running standpoint, Ryan's a good athlete. They both are. I think Ben is a little bit more of a willing runner than Ryan is. But I also think the main thing is just the fact that Ben has so many more resources. Obviously, he has me helping him. He has his brother helping him. And he gets something that I think is really unique and awesome for Ben that almost nobody gets, which is for the last 3 years, he's had a chance to go to North Carolina State and watch his brother play in these huge environments, stand on the sidelines, be in the stands, see what these meeting rooms look like, see how they prepare themselves for a game and take care of their body. So naturally, he just has a head start on everybody else.
You also are working with Devin Larson over at Queen Creek, Gunnar Cruz at Castile. Three really highly regarded quarterbacks.
Yeah, so I think I'll start with Devin Larson. I think, you know, I just met Devin this summer, which I think is a good thing because, you know, Devin has a really good coach in Joe Germain at Queen Creek who does a great job coaching him. And I think that's very important, Brad, because as we've talked about before, all these quarterbacks have coaches. And the vast majority, private coaches, and the vast majority of the time, the information does not link together. And so, therefore, I'm not even really sure how much people are getting done. Mm-hmm. Whereas, with myself and with Joe, we might have some different things that we teach, but at the end of the day, it's very similar. The style, how you read a defense, how you run through your progressions, what are important, like getting just completions and execution and preventing negative plays on first and second down, stuff like that. Devin's a good player. Right now he has one offer at the University of Idaho. He just took a trip to San Diego State this weekend, and you know, hopefully we can get some more things coming for him.
And Gunnar Cruz going to a Pac-12 school. I live out by Castile. My kid goes to Castile, so I've seen Gunnar through the years grow, and it feels like that's going to be a great fit for him in that offense.
Yeah, so, you know, Gunnar had a lot of offers, too. I think it was awesome for him. He's a highly recruited kid, and you know, like we've been talking about, too, Arizona's taken off in football and recruiting, but also the kids having success.
Why is that?
I think that's a lot of reasons. I mean, you know, I think Arizona football's gotten bigger. It's gotten better. It's gotten more competitive. I think it's really helped that they've gone to other states and played games and played against some of these big-time out-of-state high schools, whether it's from Texas or Florida or Nevada or California, and they've won. And then these kids have been going on and you know, being good players. Just this last week, you saw Brock Purdy from Perry High School defeat West Virginia, number 16 in the country. You saw Brian Lewerke from Pinnacle beat Penn State. You know, Ryan Finley, obviously, you know, at North Carolina State. And there was one more.
There was one more.
I'm drawing a blank.
But the point is a kid like Gunner, getting back to him, is following in succession. I'm at a sideline where Spencer Brash at Higley is playing Gunnar Cruz at Castile. Yep. Spencer's going to Cal. Gunner's going to Washington State. I'm like, I'm watching two Pac-12 quarterbacks right here, 5 miles from my house. It's crazy.
It's awesome, and I think it's great. Gunner's done a great job. Gunner's gotten so much stronger physically, just putting a lot of time in the weight room. He's become a much smarter player. His throwing ability has always been really good. He's learned how to put different trajectories on the ball. But I think overall, too, his overall toughness has been become, you know, so much better, his mental and his physical toughness. And yes, I agree with you. I think that, you know, at Washington State, it's a good fit for what he does. He plays in a similar style offense at Castile, and I think he'll enjoy playing for Mike Leach.
Okay, I have to ask the question, why can't ASU or U of A keep any of these kids home?
Yeah, and so that was the other kid I said I was drawing a blank on was Bryce Perkins, who was at Chandler. He was at ASU,
Virginia, yeah,
playing at University of Virginia. They beat Miami this weekend. I think it's a top 15 team. So, you know, it's a hard question because, you know, outside of that, you got Spencer Brash, like you said, going to Cal. You got
Slovis going to USC.
You got Slovis going to USC.
Spencer,
you got Spencer
going to
Oklahoma. And the kid behind Spencer Rattler, J.D. Johnson's a good player too. And so, it's been frustrating, but, you know, look, ASU, I think Manny Wilkins is a good player. I mean, he's playing good for them. Right now they have two commits in this next class, and Ethan Long from Oregon and a kid from Mission Viejo named Joey Yellen, who they like. And look, I hope that Ben Finley actually considers ASU because it'd be a good spot for him timing-wise.
Heard also a JUCO that's got some years left may end up in the system over at ASU just because there is nobody really behind Manny. What do you make out of Josh Rosen so far?
Yeah, so, you know, I've been doing a podcast over at KTAR called The Rosen One. We do it every Tuesday, myself and Jordan Bird. And so I've studied Josh Rosen a ton. I think he's gotten better in every game he's played. He's done a good job so far not turning the ball over. He did throw an interception yesterday, but he was, you know, I think 21 for 30, 67% completion percentage. I guess what I would say is he's what you should expect out of a rookie. He has some really good moments. He has some bad moments. Yesterday, he made some couple great throws on a deep play action pass to Christian Kirk, another one to Ricky Seals-Jones down the middle of the field, and then took some sacks that were, you know, his fault in protection, not knowing what his hot routes are or his side adjustments are. And that's just to be that's what happens when you're a rookie quarterback. So he's got a long way to go, but I think he's playing well.
Mm-hmm.
They just need some more help out of the offensive line. They need some more help out of the wide receivers outside of Christian Kirk and Larry. David Johnson's got to get going, and their defense has to stop somebody in the run.
Okay, the criticism directed towards Mike McCoy,
yeah,
valid?
Yeah, it's hard for me to say that because I'm not sitting in their meeting rooms, but I think I have a feeling for what's going on in his mind. And what's going on in his mind, I believe, is number one, they went into the year with Sam Bradford. They've made a quarterback change really quickly. I think he has a very large playbook that he's trying to condense a certain amount so he doesn't overwhelm Josh. I'm sure they are spending a lot of time really trying to figure out how to protect him physically in a game, pass mm-hmm. protection-wise, but also protect his confidence by not allowing him to get hit and throw interceptions and make a ton of bad plays. But with that being said, one of the things that stuck out in yesterday's game was their change of tempo in the end of the third quarter,
yep,
beginning of the fourth quarter.
Very productive.
And he was a lot more productive. It's something,
yep,
I've been talking about for the last few weeks. I think what happens when you go no huddle and you change the tempo is you simplify the defense because they can't get all their blitz calls in or their exotic looks in. So what you can do on an offense is also simplify, and I think maybe that's what Josh needs a little bit, is to simplify the route concepts, allow him to see it a little bit better, process the information, trust what he sees, and execute better. But I also think there's just a major lack of creativity right now on the offense,
mm-hmm,
compared to when you watch the Kansas City Chiefs or when you watch the Philadelphia Eagles or you watch the Chicago Bears. Really creative offenses. You don't see that from Mike McCoy. So I think that some of the criticism is warranted, and I know people are getting frustrated.
If we're talking about, I'm going to go back on the high school thing as we wrap things up. What do you tell parents? Because here's my thing. I'll walk in on Monday morning and my email is filled with, this,
yep,
coach doesn't know what they're doing.
Always.
And parents are pretty much nuts from my point of view when it comes to getting their kids recruited at a high-end level. Not all of them, but most of them are not realistic. Rudy, you deal with this in the quarterback end of things. What is it that you would say to parents on this whole, my kid's got to get recruited?
That's a very long answer, but the number one thing I would say is parents need to stop taking the recruiting side of things personally or as an attack against their kid. Which is how they feel a lot of times when they see other kids get offered Division I scholarships and not their kid. That's just not what it is. Every process is different. The other major thing, especially for the quarterback position, is, look, kids should work hard and dream big and spend a lot of time mastering their craft, but genetics are a huge part of it. I've never had a college coach. I showed you my phone before. It's nothing but college coaches.
That's right, it is.
I've never had a college coach ask me what the kid's stats are or what his win-loss record is. They always ask me, how big is he? What is his arm strength like? What is his competitive spirit like? Can he make good decisions? Is he a good student? Is he coachable? Those are the things that matter. And so the last thing I would tell parents is this, is the best way to give your kid a chance or an opportunity to get recruited is to go to a school where your kid can be the starter, not go to a school. There's already 15 quarterbacks there in the open enrollment era.
Yeah. And it's something that a lot of parents don't want to hear, but that's good stuff there. You need to go be a dad, because I hear in the green room, the little one, and you've been great in coming in, and look forward to visiting with you again down the road, Rudy. It's great you're having success.
Thanks for having me on.